Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
In Lazarus, we see the future of all who believe. We also receive hope for those who grieve, because your loved ones are not dead. They're sleeping. Their bodies are asleep, but their spirits are present with the Lord. And this is the reality. Jesus said, whoever lives and believes in me will never die. He meant that.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his series, Jesus Encounters. Join us as Pastor Brian concludes his teaching on John chapter 11, verses 1 through 44, as he examines an encounter between Jesus and those who grieve. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
They say, you know, I don't know. I just feel so awkward because I don't know what to say. You know what? I'm right with you. I don't know what to say. But you know what I tell them? Don't say anything. You don't necessarily have to say anything. Now, there sometimes, you know, you do say something, and there's a time and a place to say something, but it just depends on the circumstance. It depends on the people. In a second, Jesus is dealing with Mary is different than it is with Martha. Jesus doesn't really say anything, but he says something to Martha because of her disposition. Martha needed to be reminded of the truth. And oh, what a great truth. I'm really glad that Jesus spoke to Martha. I'm really glad that she approached him in this way, because it gave Jesus the opportunity to say, in what is, in my opinion, the most profound thing Jesus ever said. And that's a pretty serious statement there, because Jesus said many, many profound things. But to me, to say this, I am the resurrection and the life. You know, Martha, she's thinking, she's, of course, Jewish. She knows from the scriptures there's going to be a resurrection someday way out in the future. Who knows how long that's going to be? She says, Lord, I know my brother's going to rise again then. Jesus says, Martha, you don't get it. I'm the resurrection. It's not this event that's going to happen out there that's going to raise your brother. It's me that's going to raise your brother. And when that event does happen out there, it's going to happen because of me. And what a profound thing. Who has ever said anything like this? Nobody has ever said anything like this. And because of the things that Jesus said, and because of this particular thing Jesus said, it was C.S. Lewis who popularized the what's called the trilemma. The trilemma being that Jesus, when you're faced with the person of Jesus, you can't just accept him, as was common in Lewis's day and as is still common today. You can't just accept him as like a good teacher, or like a philosopher, somebody who had a great moral perspective. He's either God or he's none of those things. So the trilemma is that he is either a liar, he is a lunatic, or he is the Lord. It's one of the three. And if he's not the Lord, then he's something else. He's a liar or a lunatic. Because you couldn't say he's a good teacher if he lied about things, which he would have been lying if he wasn't really the Lord, right? You couldn't say if he's a good teacher just if he was a lunatic. So Jesus here makes claims that no one else has ever made. I am the resurrection and the life. He speaks truth to Martha. Now, let's go to Mary. So as we go to Mary, and we'll pick up in verse 32, then when Mary came where Jesus was, she and saw him. Notice a different posture. She fell down at his feet. So Martha seems to come confrontationally, sort of a, you know, standing there with Jesus. Why didn't you come? Mary comes and she falls at his feet. In a sense, it's kind of their personalities, right? Mary's in the kitchen. She's doing all the work. Mary's sitting at the feet of Jesus. You know, many times, if you're teaching on Moses, you have a tendency to call him Noah. Teaching on Noah, you're always calling him Moses. That kind of stuff drives me crazy. And sometimes I hear people on the radio, they're teaching on Moses and they keep calling him Noah. Or they're teaching on Noah and they keep calling him Moses. And I hear him and I think, gosh, those guys, can't they get it right? And then guess what? I hear myself on the radio, I'm doing the same thing. I'm like, how did I do that? Martha and Mary, it's two M's, so it's kind of easier to mix them up. But with Mary, so she falls down at his feet saying to him, Lord. Now look, notice, she says the same thing. Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. But I think her tone was different. I mean, she's at the feet of Jesus. She's just like she always is. You know, it's almost like Mary, her personality is a personality that needs an explanation. You know, some people are like that. Some people need an explanation, and some people don't need an explanation. They just need someone to enter into their experience with them. And so we see Jesus doing both things here, and this is where we see his humanity. So look what happens. So Jesus, when he saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled, and he said, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. Verse 35, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. Now again, look at what he says to Martha and look at what he does with Mary. He doesn't say anything. He just weeps. He just enters in. Now, of course, Jesus was not weeping because of the circumstances that were, you know, irreversible. Because obviously Jesus knew that in just a few moments, all of this sorrow was going to be turned to joy because he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. He knew that. But yet he enters into the moment with Mary. He enters into her grief. He enters into her suffering. And he there with her, he sees all of this and he weeps. And then it says this. In verse 36, it says, then the Jews said, see how he loved him? And some said, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Now, notice in verse 33 and now in verse 38, it says twice that Jesus groaned. This is really an interesting word, and I don't know why those who translated the Bible into English, I don't know why they translate it this way here. This same word is translated differently in other places. The word means, more literally, it means to be filled with anger or to be filled with indignation. The word is a combination of words, and one part of the word actually is used in another context, not in the scriptures, but it's used in Greek to refer to a snorting angry bull. So here you have two times it said regarding Jesus that he groaned in his spirit. Jesus is angry. Who's he angry at? Well, he's certainly not angry at Martha and Mary. He's not angry at the people around him. Who is he angry at? He's angry at death. He's angry at sin. He's undoubtedly probably angry at Satan, who brought this whole mess into existence. And what we see here, among other things, we see Jesus is having a confrontation with the powers of darkness. He's having a confrontation with death itself. And in the face of it, as he sees the brokenheartedness, as he sees the suffering, as he sees the grief, he's angry. But you know, Jesus gets angry, and it's good because he does something about it. He doesn't just get angry and then, you know, he doesn't walk away. Just, you know, he's angry and that's it. No, Jesus is going to confront death head on here. And so we see that that's exactly what he does. He then said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him who was dead, the one who said, we know that you're the Christ. I know that you're the Christ who has come into the world. But Jesus says, take away the stone. And she says, Lord, that's not a good idea. By this time, there is a stench, for he has been dead for 4 days. Everybody knows the body's already decomposing. And so Martha, even though she believes the essential thing that Jesus is the Christ, of course she doesn't have any idea what the Lord is going to do here. I'm sure, like in so many cases that we see in the Bible, the very thing that the Lord did was just completely unexpected. Nobody thought this. Lord, what do you mean, roll away the stone? Move. What? The body's already decomposing. Why would we do that? It's almost like, well, why would we want to do that? But what does Jesus say? He says, did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who are standing by, I said this that they might believe that you sent me. Now, when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he who had died came out bound hand and foot with grave clothes. And his face was wrapped with a cloth, and Jesus said, loose him and let him go. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, remember, those of you who have read your New Testament, you know, this is not the first person that Jesus raised from the dead. Jesus earlier raised a young girl from the dead up in Galilee, in Capernaum, the daughter of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue. He raised her from the dead. But remember, he said about her, he said, she's not dead, she's asleep. And they mocked him. They laughed him to scorn. They knew that she was dead. But he just woke her up. That was up in the north. In sort of the middle of the country, Nain, as Jesus is coming down, they pass a procession. And there's a young man who's being led out to be buried. His coffin is passing by. He's the son of a woman. He's her only son. She's a widow. Jesus says to them, stop. He comes over, he touches the young man and he raises him up and he restores him to his mother. But this resurrection to me is the most, I mean, to say it's the most significant is really not the right terminology, right? Any resurrection from the dead is pretty significant. But the significance of this one is the context of where it happened. It happened just outside of Jerusalem. And it's also the timing in which it happened. Those other resurrections took place kind of earlier in the ministry of Jesus, where he was still relatively popular. But now this resurrection has taken place later, where he has now become a threat to the religious leaders, and they're wanting to destroy him. They're wanting to kill him. And they're wanting to promote the idea that he's some sort of a false prophet or a false teacher. And so it's here, just outside of Jerusalem, that he performs this most radical of miracles in raising Lazarus from the dead. He calls him forth from the grave. And he was indeed alive, because chapter 12, if you just look at the first two verses, it's so fascinating. It says, then 6 days before the Passover, so a little while after this, Jesus came to Bethany again. He'd apparently left between now and then. Now he's come back. And listen to what it says. Where Lazarus was, who had been dead, whom he had raised from the dead, there they made a supper, and Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those who sat at the table with him. Where in the history of the world, in any recorded account of life on planet Earth, have you ever read about a guy who was dead and now he's sitting at the table having dinner? You don't read that anywhere, because it never happens. People die, and guess what? They stay dead, unless Jesus is around. If Jesus is around, it's a different story. Now, Lazarus is for us, he's a picture. He is a picture of the future of all who believe. All who believe in Jesus will likewise one day rise again. The only difference between Lazarus and those who will rise again in the future is that Lazarus rose again, rose from the dead, but then he died again. But those who rise again now will rise to never die again. But this is what we have to remember. You see, in the face of death, being surrounded by this, and it's the inescapable reality that we all live with, that we are going to die, that the people around us are going to die, the people that we love and care about, they are going to die. But yet, for those who believe in Jesus, they're going to live again. they're going to live again, just like Lazarus lived again, and just like he sat at the table. So remember that one passage where Jesus said, he's speaking to Israel, the nation, and he's lamenting the fact that they're rejecting him. He says, many will come from the east and the west, and they will sit down at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but the sons of the kingdom will be cast out. That was because Israel was rejecting him. But he's talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They've been dead for centuries, at least from the human standpoint. Jesus said, oh no, they're very much alive. And there's coming a time when everybody's gonna sit down just like they did with Lazarus here at the table and enjoy a great feast together. That's the future. That's what we know to be the reality because of who Jesus is and what he did. And let's remember as we look at this, you see, Jesus makes this extraordinary claim, unlike nothing we've ever heard. He doesn't just say, I'm the resurrection and the life. What does he do? He proves it. He calls Lazarus out of the grave. But then even more powerfully than that, just a short time later, he will himself be in a grave because he's died on a cross. But what happens? He rises up from the grave. And remember, he told the men of his generation, he told them this would be the ultimate proof of his authority. They asked him when he cleansed the temple, they said, who gave you this authority to do this? And Jesus said, destroy this temple. He was speaking of his body. And in 3 days, I'll raise it. That's my authority. So Jesus doesn't just claim he's the resurrection. He proves he's the resurrection by raising Lazarus and by rising from the dead. So in Lazarus, we see the future of all who believe. We also receive hope for those who grieve. Because your loved ones are not dead. They're sleeping. Their bodies are asleep, but their spirits are present with the Lord. And this is the reality. Jesus said, whoever lives and believes in me will never die. He meant that. We don't die. We call it dying because we're just so used to referring to it like that. But Jesus says, no, those who live and believe in me, they never die. When you take your last breath on earth, you are simultaneously taking your first breath in heaven, so to speak. I don't know if we even breathe there, but if we need to, you know what I'm saying? You just transition. It's like a hallway. You're walking, you know, from one room, this earthly life, here's a room, and you exit the room, you go down the hallway, you open the door, and you walk into eternity. That's what death is. And so for those that have lost loved ones, and oh, it's so painful. But like Paul said, we do sorrow. Of course we sorrow. Just like Mary did. Just like Martha did. And Jesus understood that. He entered into the sorrow. He wept. But we don't sorrow like those who have no hope. This is not the end. With Jesus, there's a future. And it's a future beyond the grave. With Jesus, there is the promise of a reunion where we will be reunited to never be separated again. That's what Jesus brought into the world. And I want to close by going back to the story I was telling you initially about the pastor and the children in India. And because it just speaks so loudly, you know, I'm looking at these pictures and I'm looking at this video clip and I'm seeing all of these, you know, beautiful, beautiful children. And then I saw this one young girl and he showed a picture of her, showed when they first got her as a little girl and how she looked like she was on death's doorstep there. But then it kind of showed pictures of her through her life. And then she just looked stronger and healthier and more vibrant and beautiful. And then it showed a picture of her today. She's about 20 years old. She's a nurse now. And there was a whole group of nurses there together. They're all formerly, these children that came in with HIV, they all have a death sentence. And yet they've trained as nurses because they can go and they can touch anybody and not worry about it because they know that they already have the death sentence. So they go out through all the country to the different orphanages and places and they just minister until the time comes for them to die. And so I said, because I was a little bit curious about it almost looked like, well, it looks like these, they're healed. It looks like they've gotten beyond it. You know, you can live with HIV. There's plenty of people in America that do that. But he said, no, we have no medicine. We have nothing like that. He said, they do not live beyond 22 years old. And he pointed to the girl, and this is the way he put it. He said, very soon she will go to be with God. That's their perspective. She will go to be with God. And then he told me this. He said, when one of them, when it becomes apparent that their time is fastly approaching to leave, what they do is they gather with them and they spend as much time with them, and they just pour into them just the truth and God's love. And he said this, he said that when they are in that transitional moment, they are either singing praise, reciting scripture, or speaking or whispering the name of Jesus. And then he told me, he said, the young boy that you saw that passed away, he came to the very end and he could no longer speak. And he said, my son whispered Jesus in his ear and he took his last breath. And you know, I'm looking at all that he's shown me. I'm looking at these pictures. I'm looking at these beautiful children. And I'm thinking about this reality of death. And I'm thinking in my mind about that little body wrapped in that shroud and lying on that funeral pyre. And on the one hand, I'm thinking, gosh, how wrong this is, how tragic this is, how sad this is. But on the other hand, I'm thinking, thank you, Jesus. This is what you dealt with. You know, sometimes people say stupid stuff like, well, what did Jesus ever do? You know, he didn't change the world. Oh, really? Tell those 450 HIV children that he didn't change the world. You bet he changed the world. He changed the universe. He changed everything. He conquered death. He is the resurrection and the life. And as he said right here, he who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. And oh, how we thank God for Martha and for Mary and for Lazarus. And what was true for them that day is true for us today and will always be true. I talked to several people this morning already. We've had two services, right? I've talked to several people who said to me something like, you know, my son died a while back and this message has brought so much encouragement to me. It's brought so much comfort to me. And that's what the truth does, the truth of the resurrection. I'm going to close with this. My grandfather died many, many years ago. My mom had lost her mom when I was 2, and she was just 20. And when her dad died, she was very, very sad about that for quite some time. And she told me that one day in, you know, just kind of her ongoing grief, she said one morning she woke up and she just had this passage of scripture in her mind. She didn't even know what it was. And it was 2 Corinthians chapter 5, I think it's verse 8. So she, because it was in her mind, she went and she opened her Bible and she read it. To be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And that word just brought her peace. That she knew that everything was okay with her dad. That he was present with the Lord. And that's the hope that we have. That's the truth that we go through life with. And that's the comfort that we find for ourselves. And it's the comfort we share with others in times of grief.
For the month of February, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. Grace, it's a word we all love to hear. But do we really know what this word means? Without it, our lives can be dry and dusty. But when grace comes, it transforms our lives into something rich and beautiful. In this deeply relational book, noted Bible teacher Chuck Smith explores 12 great themes of God's unending, beautiful grace. With the passion of a man whose own life has been transformed by this gift, Pastor Chuck clearly explains that we are not bound to God by a huge list of do's and don'ts, and that our mistakes will never alienate us from God. But rather, our relationship with God isn't based upon our own efforts, but it's based solely on His unchanging love for us. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to discover Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We really do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our series, Jesus Encounters. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.